My name's Sean Collier. I'm sitting with Eric Leslie. Welcome back, Eric.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Because I was too sleepy to record the other night.
Yeah. We got out of that movie and it was late.
Yeah. Are we old now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Definitively.
Now that that's out of the way, what we did is we went and saw Logan.
We saw a movie about old people. It was fitting.
Yeah. It's like they were old. Now I have to go to bed and I'm probably going to wear socks. I didn't, because that's just me. Anyway, socks, movie, Logan. The big thing here that we'll tell you after this theme music plays is, wow.
It's real good.
I'm still floored by it 36 hours later. All of this and more, this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, March the 3rd. Almost 2017. We are in the Epicast Studios, where we were for half of last week, and it's just easier. It sounds better.
I've never been here. This is my first time. I mean, as someone mm-hmm. who has been with your show on and off for quite a while.
Yeah.
You come a long way, sir.
Yeah. I mean, do I still hold a phone up in a weird corner of an outdoor area near a movie theater sometimes? Yeah. But sometimes I'm and they keep weird hours. So sometimes it's, well, that movie let out at 10:45.
Right.
They're starting their day, so let's just go over there. It's worth.
You don't want to lose your roots. Sometimes you got to just hold the iPhone up.
Yeah. But hey, watch. You know what we're doing? We're endorsing Epicast.
It's true.
Like, for example, if you have audio that you need produced, go to epicastservices.com. No. Go to epicastnetwork.com/services. You want to start a podcast? Yeah, you do. Everybody wants to start a podcast. Have them help you out. It'll sound good. It'll be less hassle. People contact me frequently and say, hey, Sean, I want to start a podcast. How do you do that? And I say, I don't know, because I legitimately don't.
Right. No, you just show up here and
yeah,
it happens.
Sometimes I talk into something and then later it becomes a podcast. That's all I know. Why do I not have to know that? Because we're with Epicast. Epicastnetwork.com/services. We did the ad at the beginning.
Yeah, it was a little early for the ad roll, but all right.
Well, hey, some people do that right off the top before but that's just, that invites the skippers is what that invites.
Right.
We snuck it in. It was after the theme music, but still at the beginning. The point is,
don't go away though, because we actually have a movie to talk about.
Yeah. Logan, okay, you go first, because let's talk.
Sure. So I went in with, I would say, middling expectations. The trailer was good. The trailer was surprisingly good.
Yes.
Especially after a run of, for the X-Men property specifically, I would say lackluster to acceptable material.
Right.
I didn't see Apocalypse. I listened to you talk about Apocalypse and mm-hmm. listened to the rest of the internet talk about Apocalypse. I had a mixed reaction to Days of Future Past. It was fine. I remember from, you know, the original Bryan Singer X-Men movies, I saw the first three and then First Class when that came around, and I'm probably forgetting some. I didn't see X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, X-Men, kind of a known quantity.
Yeah.
Or so I thought.
Yeah.
And I was really wrong. This is an exceptional film. Like, this is not just a good superhero movie. This uh-huh. is a genuinely good movie. And we'll talk about that from a few different angles, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But on any level, what we watched two nights ago was a really good 2 hours of film.
Yeah. I perhaps unfairly look at the non-Marvel Cinematic Universe Marvel movies
right.
as one collective hunk of crap.
Sure.
And
I mean, you've been given material to back that up.
Right, definitely. You know, the exceptions to that, I guess, are the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, which that's a long time ago now.
It
and
is.
I only even like the first one. And I'll admit that I haven't seen many X-Men movies. I haven't seen those Bryan Singer X-Men movies, but I know that they're regarded as fine.
They're pretty good.
Perfectly acceptable.
Pretty good movies.
More recently, though, it's the bad Spider-Man reboot that caused Fox to give up on Spider-Man.
The unforgivable Fantastic Fours.
Yeah. And some X-Men movies that, as you said, kind of range between bad and okay.
Yeah. And we should add recently, because it will be relevant to the rest of this discussion, now Deadpool.
Right. But that's not, that's a unicorn to me, because right. that's one where the entire story of Deadpool is Ryan Reynolds getting Fox to back off.
Right.
So I kind of went in and there was added skepticism because I was still excited because I knew that people really, really like the Old Man Logan story. And then the night before, I sat down and read the Old Man Logan story.
And I'm not familiar with that at all. So,
and so I can tell you, this has almost nothing to do with the graphic novel, because the graphic novel is a Marvel multiverse story,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of those Marvel multiverse stories that's an excuse to get all of the main characters together and kill most of them.
Right.
It's one of those. It's about Wolverine and Hawkeye taking a long road trip in a future where Ant-Man's dead and Captain America's dead and Iron Man's dead and, you know, and the Hulk is evil, and everything about it is Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, except for Wolverine being there.
Right.
Whereas
this is 0% connected to anything other than the story of Logan.
Right. Not even the X-Men story.
No.
This is just Logan at this point in his life. And so I walked in skeptical because Fox, and added skeptical because I thought it was connected to this thing that people really like, and then I looked at the thing people really liked and went, oh, the connection stops at Wolverine is old and in the desert, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you leaned over, I want to say 45 minutes in.
Yeah. After one of the extended action sequences, of which there are enough, but not that many.
Right. This is not John Wick.
No.
And you leaned over and said, I think this might be really good. And at that point, I was still kind of couldn't believe it. But like an hour later, I was having the same thought, like, oh my God, this is really good.
Yeah. It's really good. We're going to need to come up with different descriptors, or the podcast is going to be very short, but it's exceptionally good.
It might be as much of a unicorn as Deadpool is.
Well, I mean, I hope not. You might be right.
Yeah.
I hope it's not. I think it's informed by a lot of different things that all work in its favor. And maybe that's coincidence, and maybe that's really good planning and insight. I want to start by giving credit. Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart do unbelievable work being consistent with the characters they have now played for almost 20 years,
mm-hmm.
which is itself amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not a lot of instances of that. We see more of it. I mean, as we were walking out of the movie theater, we talked about it a very little bit. You know, that applies to Harrison Ford in the newest Star Wars.
Yeah.
It applied to Leonard Nimoy when they brought Star Trek back.
Yeah.
But there aren't a lot of instances where people come back and get to play the old version of a character that they literally played for a generation's worth of time.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine and Professor X have been embodied by these two actors for a generation now.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that in everything they do. You feel it in the way they carry themselves, the way they interact with each other, the way they relate to the world they're in. And yet, because this is such a different film, it is a different take on these characters by the same actors than anything we've seen before.
You would have a tough time arguing with me that there's a better superhero acting performance than these. than Hugh Jackman as Wolverine in this movie. If you say super villain, it gets complicated because like Heath Ledger is as good as this.
Sure.
Jack Nicholson might have been as good as this, but other than that, it's like Robert Downey Jr.'s best moments, and probably not because his job is more to be Tony Snark than like really act real hard.
Often,
like maybe Michael Keaton, not Christian Bale.
Yeah,
Chris Evans looks right, but he's not, you know, the best actor.
There are moments. I used to talk about this because I like the Bond movies.
Yeah,
probably more than they deserve, and that's fine. I own that. But I used to talk about the Pierce Brosnan Bonds, which were not great. They were not. I mean, GoldenEye was fun, and it was a resurgence and revitalization of a particular thing in a time that was absent.
Right.
So that was very cool, but they were not great movies.
Right.
However, there is a moment in one of them. I won't remember which, and it doesn't matter. Where there's this shot that just didn't belong in the movie, mm-hmm. but they kept it in, and I was so glad they did because it's being out of place served the character so well.
Yeah,
there was about 2 minutes of screen time where the camera just focuses on James Bond sitting alone in a room cleaning his gun.
Mm-hmm.
No dialogue, very low ambient music, and that's just all that shot is about.
That was an entire movie called The American with George Clooney.
Well, fair enough.
Right.
But in the case of this character, it was a reflection, a really effective reflection in a movie that otherwise was completely disposable, on a very old, tired man.
Yeah.
Who had been doing a hard job for far too long. And this whole movie... is that moment for Wolverine, except Hugh Jackman has actually earned it because we've watched him do this for almost 20 years.
And it would have been really easy. One of the stated and obvious influences on both the comic and this movie is like Clint Eastwood Man with No Name stuff.
Yes.
And no one would have been shit talking Hugh Jackman for kind of leaning into that campiness,
but he doesn't.
He doesn't at all. It feels more like, it feels like, you know, a character, a world weary character in a Western, which this has a, this is a sci-fi Western, by the way.
Yeah.
This is not a superhero movie, really.
No, this is a sci-fi Western. This is a Western that has superheroes in it.
Yeah. And the character analog might be like Tommy Lee Jones in No Country. Like,
well, I mean, they literally give you the direct analog in the film as part of the plot, which I'm not sure if we'll directly reference in this podcast, but they watch the movie that this is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not played like, you know, it's not played like, hey, Wolverine, if you saw Origins Wolverine or The Wolverine, it's played like, you know, this guy has to pick up his guns again. Mm-hmm. Those guns just happen to be claws.
Yes.
So, the performances. The direction, James Mangold is a guy that's kind of had as many misses as hits. He's got a couple really good ones like Copland and Girl Interrupted and Walk the Line. He's got some that are fun but dispensable like Identity and 310 to Yuma. And he's got some crap. He did Night and Day with Tom Cruise, and he did Identity's kind of crap. but this is the least like a superhero movie direction of any superhero movie. So yeah, Identity is not a very good movie. Logan feels less like a superhero movie than any other DC and Marvel superhero movie that I can name.
Yep.
And
because it's not a superhero movie.
Right. It's not at all. And hey, do we sound different? Okay. Here's what happened. Through no fault of Epicast's, and entirely because I didn't check a thing, we just lost about 10 minutes of recording, and we went back and discovered where we cut off and started recording on the phone. That point Eric made earlier about
back to our roots, baby.
How sometimes you got to go back to your roots.
Here we are.
We're back.
We're back at the roots.
We found the roots, everybody. But I think we lost some, you know, so we're going to try to go over that again. If one of us accidentally says Like I said a minute ago, that's what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
It is. The sound just got a little bit more lo-fi, although it is still resonant in here.
Yeah, it's a nice echo chamber.
Yeah. Like most places where two white guys talk about movies.
That was the joke. Yep.
So.
Here we go.
The direction is good. Yeah, we made really good points that are lost to the ether now.
I think we can reclaim a couple of them.
Yeah.
You said it is a Western. It is a sci-fi Western, not a superhero movie. And one of the things that I really noticed watching Logan and comparing it in my mind to other superhero movies, on the one side, you've got the Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, which has attained a consistent level of quality and craftsmanship. And then on the other side, you have the generic Fox stuff, which has not always been very good. And then you have stuff like Deadpool, which was very good, but very different. And you look at, I took Deadpool as an example and I said, okay, you know, Deadpool is a movie where things happen in places.
Right.
And those are fun things with good actors and it's an entertaining movie. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't care about the places. They fought in a shipyard at the end, and there was a freeway, and they hung out in a bar.
Yeah, because they did not have the time and the resources to really nail that stuff, because their budget was limited, and what they had was going to other places.
But it was also, it's a matter of priority. Their priority was, this character is really cool, we're going to put him in some fun situations, and we're going to let you watch him play.
Yeah.
This movie's about him.
Right.
Logan is about a lot of things, and one of the things Logan is about is place.
Yeah.
Logan takes the time. There's a shot in this movie where two characters have a very impactful, quiet scene that was itself very surprising to me.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there thinking, I kind of can't believe this scene is in this movie. But at the end of it, the camera pulls way back, like as in a Western landscape shot far back.
Yeah.
And just watches a car slowly drive down an empty highway.
Yeah.
And as the car leaves the shot, the camera just sits there and looks at the desert for, I don't know, a beat for 2 seconds before they transition out. And that, like, a superhero movie doesn't have time for that shit.
No.
But this is not a superhero movie.
No, not at all. And that there's a whole sequence that I don't want to get into, but it's in a farmhouse, which, you know, you've seen this place in some movies before, and you kind of know what's going to happen there.
Yeah,
I leaned over to you and said, "What was going to happen there?"
Yeah, and it does. But it took its sweet time.
It really did. And you lived in this
in a really good way.
You live in this great location. Again, not for an hour, maybe for 8 to 12 minutes. But in a lot of superhero movies, in a lot of movies, you would have been there for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You would have, here, you okay, audience, you get where we are right now. You see it. You acknowledge it. Now we're going to move the plot.
Yeah.
Don't
do that here.
Oh, that shot of, this is no spoiler. The shot of Wolverine carrying Professor X up the stairs.
Yeah, that is an amazing,
unbelievable.
It's an amazing moment. It is a crafted emotional moment.
Yeah,
and it's resonant. You feel it. It's really good.
This recording is going better than the last one because I didn't bring that up last time, and instead talked about a deleted scene in Deadpool. And even as I was saying it, I was like, nobody needs to hear this. And guess what? No, you didn't.
Exactly. We accidentally saved you from that. But that sequence is great, and it is so effective. Again, like I keep talking in the terms I would use to talk about another type of movie,
right?
Which is so cool and so surprising to me. It takes its time, knowing that you're expecting things to pop off.
Yeah,
you're expecting shit to go wrong.
Yeah,
but it waits.
Yeah,
it lets you sit there thinking, is it now? No, it's not now. Is it now? No, it's still not now. And you get to just enjoy these scenes and let them build and build and then pay off.
It's very rare that this movie isn't defying your expectations in terms of where the plot goes, in terms of how certain characters are used, in terms of how certain actors are used. We talked about Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. We didn't talk about Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, I had no idea he was even in this. What a shockingly brilliant surprise. Loved him.
I had that thing where I saw that he was on the cast list and went, I must be getting names mixed up.
No.
There's no way that Stephen Merchant from The Office, or not from The Office, from Extras, is in this movie.
He is. And he's great.
And he's a completely, he's not there doing what you thought he would be doing.
Well, I mean, it's
cast against type, really.
Right. Well, they clearly paid attention to the Joss Whedon school of filmmaking, which says if you want good drama, you go get a comedian.
Yeah.
And Stephen Merchant does some wonderful work, both being wry and quietly hilarious and also being kind of heartbreaking in this movie.
That's, you know, as much as that is true, the subject matter here is familiar, is well-worn territory. It's not a spoiler to say a lot of the plot of Logan is also the plot of Children of Men.
Yeah, that's true.
There is a completely coincidental overlap with Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Where a character in this movie is really, really 11.
yes. And as you say, completely coincidental because the production timelines, they could not have been influenced by.
No, there's no way that the people making Logan saw Stranger Things or vice versa, but, even in a script phase.
Yeah, but the way the young woman is presented here is very, very similar to the way Eleven is handled in Stranger Things, as is the facility that plays into the bad guy side of the plot and some of the bad guys themselves. There are a lot of analogs.
Down to an oddly parallel shot where, what's her name? Laura. Is just taking food from a grocery store.
Yeah.
Which I was when Screen Junkies does the honest trailer on that, her starring is going to be whatever the Spanish word for 11 is.
Yeah,
and it's going to be that's
absolutely.
And then I felt bad that I don't know the Spanish word for 11.
I don't.
You go on to 10 and then you stop.
Right.
And you're like, look, I learned a thing.
There it is. But we walked out of the theater saying, and this is something that I want to talk about because this has changed for me in the last 48 hours. We walked out of the theater saying, you know, these are things that you've seen before. And, you know, we can make the plot comparison to Children of Men or the kind of situational comparison to Stranger Things or like the direct comparisons to actual Westerns. But what is, I mean, I'm going to just kind of be gushing about this movie for a second. They acknowledge and own that, in my opinion, in the script. I think that the writers of this movie understood that to a point that I would not have expected and was completely taken aback by. It's not a spoiler to say, because it's in the trailers, that the X-Men comics, as comic books, exist in the world of the film Logan.
Right, which people are playing with in a lot of superhero movies. I don't think I've seen it in... No. In DC, they're selling Superman and Batman t-shirts.
Sure, yes.
And in Marvel, there's Captain America action figures.
Superhero as celebrity is something that gets played with. But it's really interesting to me here because they're actually literally taking like the old paperback blue and yellow leotard Wolverine comics, and those exist in this world, and the characters look at them and comment on them. And Wolverine is pissed.
Yep.
Logan is upset about it. Like, look at how society took my very difficult, painful life and turned it into this bullshit entertainment for kids to read and think, you know, this is what I should aspire to when no one should want to be like me, which is, both a typical Western theme and a typical cranky old man in a movie theme.
Right.
So, fine. But the film not only owns that for him, but then wraps it around on itself because the film shows you Logan and Xavier talking about and watching the stories that they grew up with and that molded them.
Right.
They watch the Westerns in this movie. They watch and talk about the Westerns who they have become the heroes of. And at the end of the movie, it actually puts a shockingly emotionally successful bow on that.
Yeah.
By saying, like, you know, these stories that you grew up absorbing did transform you, transform these characters. And heroism in fiction inspired heroism in actual life in this story. And it puts value on that in the text of the film. And I'm talking about an X-Men movie.
Yeah.
When I say that shit, I'm talking about a superhero movie. I don't expect to come away thinking about, like, the cycle of life imitates art.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about Wolverine.
And the particular circumstances and plot developments in this movie, which we're not going to talk about, so you can go in as pure as possible.
And you should.
Which you absolutely should. I mean, don't, yeah, I mean, even a lot of other reviews, even some trailers are going to give away too much.
Yeah.
Just go. This move, the circumstances of this movie allow it to say way more than superhero movies usually get to say. And I'm going to leave it at that. And you explain one aspect of that very well. Beyond that, I'm going to leave it at that. But except to say that they really seized the opportunity they had with this movie.
I think this is not – it's not fair to say the first, because there have been both in terms of an R rating and in terms of content, there have been others. But this felt like one of – the first truly memorable adult comic book movies. And I don't mean adult like we have an R rating.
Yeah.
I don't mean like we can say fuck or cut off heads.
Yeah.
I mean this film was written and performed in and crafted by people who love 30 years of source material and want to tell an adult story about being influenced by that and the, a world that has been crafted by that.
Yeah.
And it has superheroes in it because that's the source material, but this is not a comic book movie. This is a movie informed by a comic book history.
You know how comic book people will frequently cite something, some series, some run, some trade paperback as, go read that one. It's completely different.
Yeah.
This is, it's about Wolverine, but it's completely different from everything, all the X-Men stuff that's ever existed. This completely stands on its own. Usually, that's not true. Usually, people are exaggerating. And people even say that about certain movies.
Mm-hmm.
People said that about Suicide Squad.
Right.
And it's usually not true. This, it is.
Yeah.
This is the first superhero movie that's completely doesn't care about the conventions of we are a superhero movie. Maybe.
I'm willing to say that that's probably true. Mm-hmm. I have not seen all the superhero movies.
Right.
But I can't think of another one that so casually disregards the tropes of the genre and just says, no, these are superheroes in the kind of movie we want to make.
Right.
As opposed to we're making a superhero movie. But I do think that I can't overstate how important it is that history is there. Like, I wouldn't necessarily want someone to see this movie if they didn't have any idea who the X-Men were.
Right.
Like, ironically, I think this movie actually has a narrow market. Mm-hmm. Narrow is the wrong word, but like, it is specifically for you grew up loving the X-Men, but now you're ready for a different kind of story.
Yeah.
It's not for kids. It's not for the comic book audience. And there were children behind us in the screener, and I was...
Yeah, bad parenting.
Very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not for uninitiated general audiences.
Right.
It probably would work still as a movie. You would still enjoy the emotional resonance of the characters and the scenes, but the weight of Hugh Jackman's performance after 20 years of this character matters. It really matters.
Yeah.
And the same for Patrick Stewart. You need to feel that to really get the impact of what they've done.
And in spite of the fact that we keep telling you this is not really a superhero movie, is this also one of the best superhero movies? If we now say, okay, in as much as, yes, this is a movie with a comic book superhero, I think the peers to this are like, you know, The Dark Knight.
Yeah, Dark Knight's where I would have gone.
And you know, whatever your favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movie is,
This is as good as Winter Soldier or Civil War or The Dark Knight, in my opinion.
Which, independent of everything else we've said, is already stunning.
Sure.
That one of these X-Men movies reached that level that we talk about that Marvel cinematic universe always hits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and they hit it in different ways. Like, I enjoyed Doctor Strange, the last movie I saw with you and did a podcast about.
Yeah.
I had a good time.
Yeah.
I didn't come away feeling much.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed it. It was very well made and palatable, and everybody in it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another level. Like, Winter Soldier was impactful in some ways. The ending of Civil War is impactful in some ways.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call them, like, heartbreakingly emotional, but they actually do manage to sort of touch on something essential about the nature of conflict and storytelling.
Right.
But I walked out of this film truly just stunned.
Yeah.
And I cannot think of many other. I also walked out of The Dark Knight stunned. I remember walking out of The Dark Knight when I saw it in a theater and thinking, I have just seen something different.
Yeah.
I've seen something special.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot of movies in this genre that create that, and this definitely did.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before I see a new movie this good. You know, I hope I do. I always hope I do. But I do not expect the Marvel Cinematic Universe Spider-Man that's coming out, or Fast and the Furious 8, or any of the... I will be stunned if there's a big event movie as good as this year. I would expect that it gets, you know, it's going to get to... I don't expect Episode 8 to be as good as this. I really don't.
Oh, no, probably not.
Now, that doesn't mean Episode 7 was better than this movie, which is a very difficult comparison to make. I don't think, to go to something I watched recently, I don't think Rogue One was better than Logan.
No, I'm not even sure Episode 7 was better than Logan. If I'm honest about it, I enjoyed Episode 7 a lot. I think it did a lot to write a franchise that had woefully gone off the rails. But like, taken as a standalone piece of filmmaking, I'm not sure I think it was better.
When there's 2017 films that are better than Logan, it's going to be this year's Arrival and this year's Moonlight, whatever those movies end up being. It's not going to be. I mean, this is really in rarefied territory for a tentpole blockbuster kind of a film.
Yeah.
And so we liked it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we really liked it. You should see this movie.
Yeah, we can rate it now, you know, just in case a recording stops again. Mm. But this is one where, like, I'm giving it a 9 and I feel bad that I'm not giving it a 10.
I would also say 9. I probably wouldn't say 10.
Yeah.
I think that it is true. I don't remember. Sorry, dear listener. I don't remember if this is the part we lost or the part we kept, and now you're hearing it twice.
Yeah.
It pushes its R sometimes.
Yeah.
It.
Oh, we did lose that. Yeah.
It fights for its R maybe more than it needs to. There's, I mean, the spoilers, the very first word in the movie is fuck.
Yeah.
It's the first spoken word in this film.
And then that word comes up many, many more times.
And then a lot of people throw it in as just kind of dressing on whatever they're saying.
Yeah. And a woman says, "Hey, Logan, look," and shows him her boobs.
Yeah.
Which might as well have been her saying, "Hey, audience, we can do it."
Right. It actually plays in that moment. That's a scene about his tired life and how sick he is of just kind of this meaningless existence. And it works in that moment, but also in the back of your head that you're like, oh, they're saying we can show tits.
Right.
Look at this. Look what we've done.
But minor point. This movie's really good.
This movie is really fucking good. And I want to give credit, even in that criticism, I want to give credit that without that R rating, and without the way they play with it, you couldn't tell this story.
Definitely not. This is a movie, like Deadpool, that could not exist at PG-13.
Yeah, it needs the violence, and it needs the emotional tone that it lets the characters go to.
Yeah.
Professor Xavier in this movie, Patrick Stewart, is doing something genuinely interesting because he is such a calm, fatherly presence in all of the other X-Men films. And here he is angry and sad and bitter and lonely, and he's old. I mean, he's so, so old.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I love it. It is a genuine, interesting performance. And he also has moments in this film of peace and humor and levity. But like, taken as a character, it's a version of Professor X that we've never seen and that we can only see from him because one, he's been doing it for almost 2 decades, and two, this film allows him to be an R-rated Xavier.
We'll stop gushing now, but this is absolutely... This is a movie I expect to be in my top 10 at the end of the year, definitely. This is absolutely, you have to see it.
Yeah, go see Logan. Logan is really, really good.
We're gonna dramatically change the subject, because that's the point, after this.
Hey guys, this is Marta from Marta on the Move. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. When you're done with this one, you should go check out mine on www.martaonthemove.com on the Epicast Network. You can find me on Twitter at @ICan'tFindMarta. If you like interesting people and places in Pittsburgh, food and drink, travel advice, and general nerdery, check it out and keep it moving.
And we're back. Man, saying a thing twice just kind of takes the wind out of your sails, doesn't it?
I mean, I'm glad we got it down again.
We haven't done that in a while. We did that early on.
Yeah, I don't remember which one we lost and had to redo.
Oh, did you and I do this
once? Oh, no, yeah, we've done it. I don't remember. It's been a long road.
Yeah, there's a bunch of episodes.
Not as long as Logan's Road. Hey!
No, hey. But we're into some extra butter. I wanted to talk about this, and I realized I don't know how much experience you have with it.
Okay.
I would like to talk about virtual reality, and I just assume that you know that because you know tech things.
So I have very little firsthand experience, and I have a whole lot of contextual reading and watching experience.
But I remember being in your house, and you put your phone in a cardboard contraption.
Yes.
I was on Mars.
I have used the Google Cardboard version of virtual reality, which anybody who has a phone can do for about $20.
Yeah.
Hey, listener, do you have a phone? If you want to experience virtual reality, go download Google Cardboard. It's a free app. And buy a $20 holder for your phone. And you will experience a fairly crude version of virtual reality.
Yeah.
I have not gotten to play with an Oculus Rift or an HTC Vive or... a Sony PlayStation VR or any of the other various consumer grade.
Yeah.
The Samsung Gear, I guess, is the other one.
Yeah.
I haven't played with any of those. There's actually an arcade here in town where you can go and put one on, which I have not done. But
I did that, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. But you've thought about this enough that you can certainly talk about it for 10 minutes.
Yes, I can.
So a couple of weeks ago, I was at one of these places, and I played with the... I think I was wearing an Oculus Rift. I could be wrong. For an hour, and I played what is a very simple game visually called Super Hot, which is a great game. But there's not a lot going on. I mean, it's you're looking mostly at shapes and figures.
Yeah, it's a Tron style VR world,
and my reaction was. When this gets really good, both in terms of games, but even just in terms of movies, TV, I think during the Super Bowl, weren't we seeing an ad for an episode of 24 that was in VR?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. When that gets really good, I think we're kind of fucked as a society. because in the hour I played that, it was like, if this was amazing...
Yeah.
I would never want to do anything else.
Well, I mean, we have a neat habit, which we are indulging here, of wrapping back around to a previous topic. Sean, we're old.
Right.
This is literally, the conversation you are starting right now is literally the same conversation old people have had in perpetuity for all of human history. This is those kids and their rock and roll. This is those kids and their video games, ironically enough.
Yeah.
But this is also like, man, that printing press, no one just listens to oral tradition anymore. All the way back, this is what we do.
Well, yeah. I'm not going to say I'm not old, but I think there's an exception. You know, I think about things like Second Life.
Sure.
Where that was... limited enough that it only ensnared a very small percentage of the global population.
Well, yeah, but I played Second Life. It didn't ensnare me.
But there were people for whom it ensnared. There were people who handed their lives over, as does Warcraft.
Yeah, of course that's true. But Sean, that's always there. There are also, you know, a small but enough to freak out the populace number of people who sat in their attic and listened to Beatles records all day. Like, that's not unique. every group of people in society has extreme obsessive personalities who will latch onto a thing and neglect the rest of their life for it.
My question is this so good that it's going to have a meaningful impact on society? More like here's this takes off of a conversation I had, not on the podcast, about immersive theater.
Sure.
And Westworld.
Okay.
Where to me, the actual product being offered, well, we're not going to talk about immersive theater because no one, basically no human beings know what the hell it is. So well, instead we'll talk about Westworld because some human beings know what Westworld is.
Right, sure.
The product being sold in Westworld, yeah. Not the TV show we watch, the place within the world of that show.
Yeah, the fictional existence of Westworld.
The product being sold is the ability to switch realities for a while.
Yeah.
Which I think is true of immersive theater as well.
Sure.
And I've seen with immersive theater, just in a very limited way, that I was all too happy to put much of my life on hold to go hang out in that reality.
Absolutely. But you wouldn't have done it forever.
You wouldn't have,
no, I? No, you wouldn't have. Because here's the thing. Like, I am a person who, for my entire life, has flirted with losing myself to things.
Yeah.
I still do it. I am up until 3-4 in the morning sometimes because there are people who are wrong on the internet, and I've just decided this is the thing I'm going to do tonight instead of sleep, even though obviously my body would prefer that I sleep. But it's been true of video games. It's true of binge-watching Netflix series. It's true of almost anything in a consumption culture.
Yeah.
We have infinite opportunities and infinite varieties of entertainment that we can at any point dive into. But at some point, you also want to make and eat a delicious sandwich or pet a dog with your physical hands or feel the sun. For most humans, like there comes a point where like the Maslow hierarchy of needs are not all fulfilled by whatever the one thing you're obsessing over at the moment is. And that's going to be true for anything that you can get out of a headset as well. Now here's the flip side of that. I think it will facilitate different versions of some of those needs.
Uh-huh.
I think that there will be people in long distance relationships who eventually VR will get good enough that they can have date night sitting alone in their separate homes and have it feel like date night.
Are you talking about teledildonics now?
I wasn't talking about fucking, but sure, that I just meant they can look at each other and hold hands. But yeah, no, also they can get off to it. That's not the point though. I think that it will start to transition, but that's also something that has always been true about all of our technology.
Yeah.
I can and have sit in a one place across town while my partner is in another place completely across town, and we can have a lively interactive conversation on our pocket computers that was not possible 20 years ago. Like literally impossible.
Right.
And if you go back 20 years before that, we couldn't have even done it, you know, in any textual medium. We would have had to be writing letters unless we were on the phone. And if you go back to before the phone, like you can do this again and again and again for every technological advancement in human history. So will there be a different new version of that with VR? Yeah.
Yeah.
Will I understand it? Probably not. I'm old. But the next generation will understand it. That's how this works.
Yeah. I'm perfectly willing to accept that this fear is just me being old.
Okay.
But it feels like, and this might, you know, here's where I think it could be different. As we move farther and farther into an age where anything particularly luxurious is out of the range of most people.
Okay.
But consumer electronics aren't.
All right.
I fear that it's going to that there's going to, especially among a future generation, which is not like me judging whatever the next generation is, as you Gen Xers judge us millennials. I'm not doing that.
He said, pretending any Gen Xers were listening to his podcast.
Right. No, you're a Gen Xer, aren't you?
I don't know. 1980. I'm on the cusp.
You're right on the line. If I'm a 16-year-old growing up without a lot of money in a boring suburb, without the means to really force myself to get out and do things, and I can hang out in Hyrule, why the fuck wouldn't I hang out in Hyrule?
You absolutely would. And in the 80s, ironically bringing it back around, you would have been reading a stack of comic books. Dude, this is not any different.
But it's potentially more, literally more immersive.
Okay.
Like, is there no threshold at where fictional stuff becomes so immersive that it will kill non-fictional stuff?
No, I don't accept that threshold necessarily exists. Is it possible? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. But do I think that it's, like, deterministically true? No, I don't think that it is.
Isn't it true? Now we're in a cross-examination. Isn't it true that if Westworld were a fully compelling VR series, that instead of sitting on your couch and watching your TV screen to watch Westworld, you put on the headset and heard... Now, again, this technology doesn't yet exist.
Yeah, sure.
That you heard and could look all around... And even, let's say, walk around the last great, we haven't figured this out yet, threshold of virtual reality.
Yeah.
That you could walk around those scenes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have watched every episode 6 times? Because I definitely would have.
Maybe. Okay. Are you claiming that you haven't spent that much time on media of other kinds? 6 times Westworld? I guarantee you have. You probably did last month.
Like, yeah, probably.
You're pretending that this isn't already an amount of time that you give to these things. Like, I will, if we're going to do this, we'll do it the other way. I know how much time you gave to Red Dead Redemption, which is a lovely video game.
Yeah.
If that had been a fully immersive, you're wearing the thing, you're holding the gun in your hand, you're riding the horse.
Yeah.
Would you not still have occasionally wanted to go get a goddamn hot dog? Like, you wouldn't have wanted to just actually live there because you have friends in the real world. And
maybe I want to think you're right.
Okay. I feel very confident.
I want to think that if that were true, I would have still played, you know, an hour a day and 4 or 5 hours on days when I had nothing going on and would have continued living my life. I fear that I, you know, like 22 hours would pass without me noticing it.
That would probably happen once. Maybe twice. Like, I've lost days to a really good game sometimes. Yeah. That's happened. But, like, it's not sustainable. Like, I can do it, but it's not something I would then continue to do. Sometimes we invest an entire weekend into binge-watching a season of House of Cards because that's just what we fucking do. But we wouldn't do that every day. So there's interesting research, and this is a year or more ago now that I read this stuff, so I'm going to get the names wrong if I try, so I won't try. But recent research on addiction has gone along the lines of, and I think this applies to a lot of addictive substances. I think it applies to drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. I think it applies to this type of like theoretical holodeck experience that you're talking about. I think it applies to anything that people can lose themselves in as escapism.
Mm-hmm.
That addiction is a function of not having needs filled in other places. That people in situations where they are well-loved, they are secure in their ability to survive, they are fulfilled by their daily activities. Regardless of what substance you're talking about, they are less likely to become addicted to those things because they are not living in a situation that they feel the need to escape from. So, when you ask me things like, do I think that in an increasingly disparate income society, do I worry that the people on the low end of that scale might be more prone to addiction too? But I can stop you right there. Yeah, I absolutely do. But I don't care what words come after the phrase addiction to. They're more prone to addiction to anything.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any reason to think that virtual reality or any other consumer electronic or media or drug is necessarily more or less dangerous.
Yeah, to be clear, I'm not angry at it. I'm really excited about it. I'm looking forward to living out the rest of my life with this as a thing in the world.
Yeah.
But I did have a reaction getting out of there, like, this is wonderful. I feel like it makes real life a little less wonderful in certain ways, which, yeah, is probably just increasing curmudgeonliness on my part.
Well, let me tell you.
And maybe this is because I read Ready Player One. Have you read Ready Player One?
I have. It's a fantastic
book. Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the beginning dystopia there.
Sure. Ready Player One, Snow Crash, there's a lot of, right, of literature and in this genre that I think speaks to that type of fear.
Yeah.
But I will tell you very specifically a story about a VR experience that I think will hopefully, it won't cure all your worries, but it'll show you a different side of things. The guys over at GiantBomb.com, who I listen to talk about video games on their podcast all the time, they got to play around with VR stuff last month and the month before, and they talked about the first time they put on the headset and played with Google Earth, mm-hmm, because Google has released a version of Google Earth where you can have a fully immersive, like, look around and the Earth or map or wherever you are in the program will shift around with your head, and you can, like, use a controller to walk around. Essentially, you can be in a fully virtual realization of our planet.
Yeah.
And you can fly. You can be like, I'm going to be at my house. And because it's Google Earth, I don't know if, dear listener, if you've played with that, you know, if you're down below, like, call it 200 feet, it doesn't look great.
Yeah.
But you can be hovering over your town and look down and shit, there's, yeah, my house. There's, yeah, my house. There's the McDonald's. There's, yeah, everything in my town. And with this virtual reality implementation of it, you can have the experience of, I'm going to hover over my town, I'm going to look at the layout of the streets, I'm going to fly up and look over at the rest of Pennsylvania, I'm going to look at, you know, where the mountains are up to the north, I'm, mm-hmm, going to look at, and then I'm going to fly further up than that, and I'm going to look at, you know, how tiny we are by comparison to the rest of the United States, and how tiny the United States is by comparison to the rest of the world. And to a person, every single person on that podcast who talked about it was emotionally impacted. Like, yeah, the way people talk about, the way astronauts have spoken about the change in their perspective after going into space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to pretend that wearing a headset is the same as going through the training to become an astronaut and flying into space, but I am going to say they all felt impacted by the perspective shift that was pushed on them by having this experience.
Mm-hmm.
That excites me a lot more than the existence of addiction frightens me.
Yeah. But Eric, video games rot your brain.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter
at Sean Collier, PGH,
and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, Kleiber. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.